Okay, we're holding on. Pesachim Daf Samech Gimel. We're at the bottom of Samech Bet Amud Bet. We're going to talk about different understandings of what it means to have multiple intentions while bringing the korban. Tanya Acherim Omrim Hikdim Mulim La'arelim Kasher Arelim Lemulim Pasul. If you first had the intention to offer the sacrifice on behalf of the circumcised people and then subsequently on behalf of the uncircumcised people, it's going to be kosher. Other way around, however, it would be pasul. Mashna Mulim La'arelim De Kasher. The kula or la ba'inan v'leika, or relim lemulim nami kula or la ba'inan v'leika. We said our principle was, as long as you didn't have it entirely for uncircumcised people, but you had a partial, you had division between the intention of circumcised people and uncircumcised people in the intention for your Korban Pesach, it would be kosher. So why exactly do we care if the uncircumcised intention was first or second? Why would that make any difference? Either way, you don't have the entirety of your kavana being for uncircumcised. Right? So well, perhaps we could suggest that acherim hold by the shita that shechita happens at the last moment of shechita, meaning you could see shechita as cutting the entirety of the neck, which is, you know, cutting through the skin and into, you know, both the esophagus and the trachea, and then that whole process is called shechita, right? Or the other shechita would be that the shechita happens at the very end, meaning the last moment when you slaughter the last thing in order for it to constitute kosher shechita. That is shechita, right? And then essentially what you have here is you only have a moment in order to have a kavana by the shechita. So if you have, you know, if you have that, the kavana for arelim, and then afterward you have the kavana for mulim, right? But in that one moment that the shechita is actually taking place, your kavana was on the arelim, then it's considered as though the entire shechita happened with the kavana of arelim, of uncircumcised people, and it's not going to be kosher. Hilka hikdim mulim la arelim, mulim chayli arelim lo chayli, hikdim arelim la mulim, arelim chayli mulim lo chayli, right? So whichever one you put first happened at the moment of the shechita, then that's going to be what the entirety of the shechita is considered to be performed on behalf of. And if that was uncircumcised people, the entire shechita was uncircumcised people. Only if you thought that the shechita happens over the course of several moments could you have multiple intentions there. Amar Rabba lo. So Rabba says, no, that's not the proper understanding. Really, Acherim does hold that shechita happens over several moments from the beginning until the end of the process. So what exactly is behind Acherim's point here? In his heart, he decided in intention to have it for both uncircumcised people and circumcised people. That's what he intended to slaughter the korban for. However, he only expressed verbally that it was for uncircumcised people. He did not get around to expressing. He didn't have sufficient time to express that the korban was also for the circumcised before he finished the shechita altogether. And then the machloket comes down to as follows: whether you believe that it works, whether you believe that it works if he said arelim first. The Rabbi Meir savar lo ba'in an piv v'libo shavim. According to Rabbi Meir, you don't require the what's in your mind and what you expressed to be equal in order to constitute a kosher korban, right? So if you had it in your mind to do it both for arelim and for mulim, and you only said arelim, it's fine that it's fine that what you had in your mind and what you expressed were not identical. It still works, and we follow what you ended up saying. However, the Rabbanan say no. The korban itself is problematic if what you expressed is not identical to what you had in mind. In which case, if you only expressed la arelim, but you were thinking arelim v'mulim, the entirety of the korban doesn't work because of this incongruence between your intentions and your speech. So we're not going to say that the here, I'll explain a little bit better. It's like this, right? If it's legitimate to have different thoughts than words when it comes to korban, then if you express something that's different than what you're thinking, we still consider that as a legitimate expression. And if all you expressed was uncircumcised people, so it worked. So you did a korban for uncircumcised people, which is not valid. However, if it's not legitimate to have an expression that's different than your thoughts, and you express something that's different than your thoughts, we don't consider that as a legitimate expression, as a significant expression. So even though you only expressed for uncircumcised people, you only expressed it for uncircumcised people. However, because that's different than your thoughts, we're not going to consider that a significant expression that's now going to limit your entire intention down to uncircumcised people as opposed to division. Because Rabbi Meir lo ba'inan piv libo shavim. Well, is that, you know, the assumption there would be that Rabbi Meir's shita is explained by assuming that he does not require what's in your mind and what you express to be equal. But is that even true? Or I mean who? But I can contrast that assumption in the following braita. Hamit kavin lomar truma v'amar maaser, maaser v'amar truma, o she'eni nichmas l'vayt zeh v'amar lazeh, she'eni ne'ne lazeh v'amar lazeh, lomar klum achu piv libo shavim. If you did any of the following, you intended to give the following crops for truma, but you said miser instead, or vice versa, or you said you made a swear not to enter into a specific house, and in your mind you intended one house, but you expressed a different house, or you prohibited benefit upon yourself from an individual, and you in your mind you had one individual, and then you ended up saying a different individual. Right? There was your statements are of no significance until what's in your mind and what you expressed are equal. Now, this Mishnah was not given an author, and unattributed Mishnayot are all attributed to Rabbi Meir, Stam Mishnah Rabbi Meir, in which case we assume that Rabbi Meir holds by this principle that you need to have your mind and your words equal. Ela Amar Abaye Reish Damar Simon Risho and Lemulin V'siman Sheni Af La'Reilim V'siman Sheni Nami Petiche Be Mulin Sefet Amar Siman Rishon La'Reilim Siman Sheni Lemulin V'siman Rishon Ha Lo Petiche Be Mulin. Rather, this is the case, right? Where it works, right? In the ratio, let's say you said that the first of the two, the first of the two, you're either your trachea or your esophagus. The first of the two that you cut is going to be for circumcised people, and the second one that you cut will also be for uncircumcised people, right? In which case, you have circumcised people included in both. It was exclusively for circumcised people, the first one that you cut, and in addition to circumcised people, also uncircumcised people in the second one you cut, but they're both going to be valid because you don't have a case where the entirety of one of the of either the trachea or the esophagus was cut exclusively for uncircumcised people, and therefore it's going to work. However, the Seifa is talking about a case where you said that the first one you cut will exclusively be for uncircumcised people, and the second one you cut will also be for circumcised people. In which case, one of the simanim, right, so one of the either the trachea or the esophagus that you cut was exclusively done for Arelim. And then the machloket is whether that's a problem, right? So here's the machloket. Rabbi Meir Lata'ame De'amar Mefalgin B'chatzi Matir. Rabbanan Lata'ame De'amrin En Mefalgin B'chatzi Matir. So there's this concept of pigul. Now pigul is if you performed a significant portion of the avoda, of the korban, with the wrong intention in mind, that korban is pigul. It can't be eaten among, you know, other ramifications, right? But it has to be a significant portion of the korban. It can't just be an insignificant, meaning the korban has many steps, but an insignificant part of one step is not going to make the entire korban pigul. It has to be an improper intention that surrounds an entire significant portion of the avoda itself. Right? In which case, they have the following machloket. Is cutting either the trachea or the esophagus without the other considered a significant portion of the avoda such that having the improper intention by it renders the entire korban to be pigul? According to Rabbi Meir, just doing half of that stage of the avoda, meaning just cutting either the trachea or the esophagus, but not both of them, is significant enough such that the improper intention renders the entirety of the korban pigul. According to the Rabbanan, you have to cut both with the wrong intention in order to consider that shechita to be pigul and to render the entire korban to be pigul. So, according to Rabbi Meir, once you cut one for only uncircumcised people, then you had the wrong intention by a significant portion of the avoda, and the entire thing is going to be pigul. However, if you cut both of them However, according to the Rabbanan, you need to cut both of them in order for it to be considered that the significant portion of the avoda is done with the wrong intention. Okay, new Mishnah. Shofet Petach ala chametz over below taseh. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Avatamid. So someone who slaughters the Korban Pesach on Chametz, or over Chametz. We're going to talk about what exactly that means. Right, the Torah just says, Al HaChametz, that can't be done, but what exactly does that mean? So you violate the Lotase of not slaughtering the Korban Pesach over Chametz. Rabbi Yehuda says, that actually exists by all, by the Korban Tamid as well. Right? Because the Korban Tamid, you can't slaughter on Chametz. Right. In fact, the Korban Shtei Halechem, right, which is brought on Shavuot, is the only time that you find chametz in the avoda. Rabbi Shimon Omer HaPesach Barbasar Lishmo Chayav. So Rabbi Shimon says that that if you slaughter the Korban Pesach in the proper time on the 14th, right, with the proper intention Lishmo, with chametz, that's when you're be chayav. Vishlo Lishmo Pater. Right? If you did it on the 14th. Which is the proper time, you didn't do it l'shem korban pesach, you're going to be pater. V'shar kol ezvachem. However, when it comes to all the other korbanot, bein lishman, uvein shelo lishman, pater. Whether you did it for their, you know, the kavana for that zevach, or not for the kavana of that zevach, you're pater. Ubemoed, and if you did the korban pesach on the chag itself, not on the 14th, lishmo pater, if you did it for the sake of the korban pesach, you're going to be pater. However, if you did it not for the sake of the korban and during the chag, you're going to be chayv if you had chametz there. V'shar kol ezvachim. However, all the other korbanot, bein lishman, bein shelo lishman, if you slaughter them during the moed, during Pesach, whether it was lishmo or not lishmo, you're going to be chayav for slaughtering the korbanot with chametz. Chutz min achatat sheshechata o shelo lishma. Except for korban chatat that you slaughtered not lishmo. So a lot of different variants here. We have two different shitas, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. We have a discussion regarding the korban pesach, regarding the tamid, and regarding all other sacrifices. And we also have a difference that exists between the rest of the year and in Pesach itself. So we're going to find that those variants are going to be very significant in understanding different brightas and seeming steers between them, but a lot of different shitas in terms of exactly when you're chayav for this prohibition about slaughtering a korban over chametz and what over chametz means for that matter. Amar Rav Shimon ben Lakish, the Gemara starts out, Rav Shimon ben Lakish shita as follows, Le'olam enu chayav ad sheyeh chametz l'shochet o l'zore, right? O l'chad b'nei chavura. So you're not going to be chayav unless the following criteria are met. First of all, the chametz must be owned by the person slaughtering, by the person sprinkling the blood, or by one of the members of the chabura who is offering this korban pesach. Right? However, it can't just be that you're slaughtering korban pesach when someone in the world owns chametz. The ad she imo be'azara, and furthermore, says Reish Lakish, the chametz needs to be there in the azara. It's not enough that you own the chametz; you can't do it on the chametz. Means you can't do it together with the chametz. The chametz needs to be there, right? Rabbi Yochanan Omer afal pi she'ein imo be'azara. According to Rabbi Yochanan, this isra is violated even if it's not in the azara with you. B'mai kamiflegi. Now, what's the underlying point of their machloket here? Ilema be'al besamuch kamiflegi. Right. So you may think that the machloket is about this. When the Torah says that you cannot slaughter the Korban Pesach al HaChametz, what that means is, literally, you can't slaughter the Korban Pesach next to Chametz, right? In which case, Reish Lakish would say, al implies next to. If it's not there with you, you're not chayav. And Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan says that that al is not next to him, just, you know, it's while you own Chametz, let's say. And so even if it's not next to you, you're going to be chayav. But the issue is suggesting that's the point of the machloket is as follows. The Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish savar al besamuch lo ba'inan. Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish savar al besamuch. Rabbi Yochanan savar lo ba'inan al besamuch. Va'ipli v'ipalguba charazimna. Assuming that those are behind their shitas, that we already see this machloket elsewhere, this exact machloket elsewhere, such that it would be unnecessary to repeat this machloket in a different in our context. Right, we spell that machloket already very clearly. Detnan, we learned in the Mishnah, shochet toda lifnim v'lachma chutz lachoma. If you slaughter a korban toda, in the azara, or in the Beit Hamikdash, and then the the bread, and you have bread outside the wall, lo kadash alechem, right? So the bread does not become kodesh, my chutz lechome, and the Gemara asks, what exactly does it mean that it's outside the wall? Rabbi Yochanan amar chutz lechome beit pagi. So Rabbi Yochanan says, outside the wall of beit pagi, meaning not in Yerushalayim at all. Aval chutz lechome azara kadesh, however, if it's outside the walls of the azara itself, it still becomes kodesh, because there, where the bread would need to be together with the korban, there the bread needs to be together with the korban. So the question is, well, you know, what does it mean needs to be with it? Right? Does it mean that, does it need to be literally there with the Azara? So Reish Lakish Shishito would say, yeah, right? We're talking about when it's Davka there in the Azara. And Rabbi Yochanan says, no, as long as you own it and it's in the city, you're fine. Right? Avelo Ba'in and Al-Basamuch, right? When it says that you need to do that Korban, you know, on the Lechem, it doesn't literally require it being next to it. Rishim Ben Lakish Amar Afilo Chutz Lechoman Azara Lo Kadish. If it's outside the Chom of the Azara, says Rish Lakesh, that's not going to be Kodesh. Why? Al Ba'inan, Al Basamuch. Because Al is the implication of slaughtering it on the Chametz, on the bread, is that it's next to it. It's right nearby. In which case, this Machloket of whether the implication of Al is immediately next to it, and Rish Lakesh and Rabbi Yochanan's debate about whether Al, whether it needs to be there, or whether you just need to own it in the general vicinity, it needs to be in Yerushalayim, is already expressed in a totally different context. Ela ba'atra, safek ha'mifligi. Just quickly, I'll explain that this debate that happens between Rish Lakesh and Rabbi Yochanan is fundamentally a debate about the implication of the word al, or the connotation, rather, of the word al. And they have this debate. And then they give a nafkamina to this debate, meaning the nafkamina would be if you slaughter the korban todah with the bread there or not there. So that's enough, meaning they debated the meaning of the word. And they brought you an implication that it's not normal to bring you every single nafgamina. Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan are not going to just have a machloket, and Shas is going to list every single nafgamina that exists, you know, to their machloket of whether Al requires it to be right next to it. So since we already have this machloket of what Al means, and they already brought in a nafgamina of what Al means, it would be odd if they're having if the Gemara brings down a whole separate machloket that essentially is coming down to the same principle that they already debated. Oh, we're just going to teach every single nafkamina of this machloket? That's not usual. Unless, as we're going to see, that this is a fundamentally different case, such that their shitas that you learn in one of the cases would not necessarily transfer over to the other case. Rather, let's assume for now that the actual debate that's happening between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish is whether a doubtful warning works. In order to be punished in Beit Din, so you need to have witnesses come in and say that what you're doing is wrong. And you have to have that warning from the witnesses. But the witnesses have to be confident that what you're doing is wrong, right? So here are the times the witnesses would not be confident that what you're doing is wrong. Let's say, as we're about to see, I'm explaining outside and then we'll do it inside. So let's say you made a swear to eat something, right? And the witnesses come in and say, you have to eat this, otherwise, you know, what you're doing is wrong. But the witnesses can't know at the time they're warning you that you're not going to eat it, because all you have to do is eat it by the end of the day. Witnesses can't come in and say, you have to do it, because we're confident that what you're doing is wrong. You can't be confident that what they're doing is wrong. They don't have to eat it at the moment you warn them. In fact, they have all day to eat it. At no point in the day when you're warning them can you be confident what they're doing is wrong, because in theory, if they wanted to eat it in the last minute of the day, they could, and they're not doing anything wrong. It's not like you're doing something wrong all day until finally you do something right by eating it. All you said was that I'll eat it today, and you still did that. So the witness is coming in the middle of the day and saying what you're doing is wrong is called a hatra'at safek, because they're not confident what you're doing is wrong by not eating the bread at that moment, because it's not wrong for you not to be eating the bread at that moment. It's only wrong if you go the entire day without eating the bread, right? So, and furthermore, another instance of a hatrat suffik would be to say, you know, you're not allowed to slaughter this korban while you have chametz in your home. But they don't know if you have chametz in your home, so they don't know what you're doing is wrong, absolutely. They can't be in the azara with you and give you a warning that what you're doing is wrong because you have chametz in your home. They don't know you have chametz in your home. They're not in your home looking at the chametz. In which case, they're saying, hypothetically, if you have chametz on your home, you know what you're doing is wrong. But we have a debate as to whether that hypothetical, you know, warning that if such and such is the case, then what you're doing is wrong. The question is that a valid hatra'a? Or do you need a confident hatra'a, or that they're sure that what you're doing is wrong, right? So, would that be the machloket here? Bahanami pligi ba'achar azimna. Well, it's unlikely that's the machloket here because they also have this exact machloket elsewhere. In which case, it's you don't really need to have every single iteration of this machloket and all the nafkaminas in every different place, right? It's enough to just have this machloket and then apply it wherever relevant. De itmar, right? Because we already learned elsewhere. Shavua shochal kigar zo hayom va'avar hayom velo achlar Rabbi Yochanan Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish damri tarvayu ena loka Rabbi Yochanan amar ena loka mishum dahava le lav shein bo mase v'chol lav shein bo mase ein lokin alav aval trat zafek shma atrav Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish amar ena loka mishum dahava le hatrat zafek v'hatrat zafek lo shma atrav aval lav shein bo mase lokin alav. So in such a case where you said I'm going to eat this loaf of bread today and then you didn't, right? So Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan have a machloket. Oh, actually, they both agree they don't get lashes for it, but they have a machloket as to why. Rabbi Yochanan says, well, it's a lav shein bo maisa. Even though you violated a negative prohibition in the Torah, there was no action involved in that negative prohibition, and you only get lashes if you do actively, if you violate a lotase. That's why Rabbi Yochanan says you don't get lashes. According to Reish Lakish, as we said earlier, this is a hatrat suffik, right? They can't know at the time of their warning that you're definitely doing something wrong, because you're not doing something wrong necessarily by not eating at that moment. You're doing something wrong by not eating at all during the day. So clearly, Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish have a machloket as to whether or not a hatrat suffik is considered a hatrat, such that you should get lashes once you're given such a warning. In which case, you don't need to teach me this machloket. They don't need to have a separate machloket about the exact same point. Right, we would just apply their svaras, and as we see frequently in the Gemara, we'd say lema. We would say maybe let's suggest the machloket here is the same as the machloket there, and then we'll see if the principles line up, and they either do or they don't. But here it's odd that Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan will be having the exact same machloket, I mean the exact same point, and they're arguing with each other over such a point that they already argued on. They would just say like our machloket there, so too is our machloket here. They wouldn't have the machloket about the case when they already argued about the principle beforehand in a different case. Okay, so Amri le'olam ba'al samuch kamifligi. Well, maybe let's suggest that actually their machloket is about the implication, the connotation of the word al, whether it really needs to be next to it. Tzricha, utzricha. And yet, even though they already have this machloket elsewhere, they need to have this other machloket because the criteria don't line up perfectly. And so it's important to have both machlokot. Di ipaligu le'inyan chametz, hava amina ba'hu dekama Rabbi Yochanan de lo ba'inan al besamoch, mishum de iser hu, v'chol heicha de ite, aval le'inyan migdash lechem lo kadish ela bifnim, eima modile l'rabishum ben lakish de ba'inan al besamoch. So where Rabbi Yochanan says it doesn't really need to be next to it, right? What if they only had the machloket by chametz and not by kodesh, and not by sanctifying the lechem of the korban todah? What if that were the case? What if that happened? Well, you would assume that only Rabbi Yochanan only holds that it doesn't need to be literally next to it by chametz, because chametz, there's an isra to have chametz anywhere. It's usur to own chametz no matter where that chametz is. So maybe in such a case, he would say, it doesn't need to be next to you, it's usher to have it. So as long as you have it, you're subject to this iser. However, when it comes to Lechem Kodesh, he would agree to Reish Lakish that it needs to literally be there, because there's no significance to having Lechem Kodesh outside the Azara. You know, it's only significant to having Chametz outside the Azara, because it's usher for you to have Chametz outside the Azara. In which case, maybe he would agree to Reish Lakish Shita when it just comes to asking if the lechem is considered kodesh if it's outside the Azara, right? So that's why we need to teach both cases, to show that no, Rabbi Yochanan argues in both cases, al basamuch never means next to it, according to Rabbi Yochanan. Not just when we're talking about chametz, right? Di ite gavai kadish ilo lo. In such a case, he would agree to Reish Lakish that if it was next to it would be kodesh, and not next to it wouldn't be kodesh. Midi dehava akli sharet, like similar to the case of a kli sharet. If something's in that vessel, the kli sharet becomes kodesh. If it's not in that vessel, it's not kodesh. Tzricha. Therefore, it's necessary to state, for the sake of Rabbi Yochanan's shita, for the clarity, to state both cases that Rabbi Yochanan argues in both cases. V'yishminil le'mikdash lechem. Now, what if you only taught the matter of mikdash lechem about the bread becoming kodesh, and then you could say that, well, if Rabbi Yochanan taught that it needs to be next to it in the case of lechem, kal v'chomer, you teach it in the case of chametz, right? So let's only teach the case of mikdash lechem, and still you don't need to teach both cases, right? No, you can't teach just that case either. Hav amina, what might you have thought? Be'ach kamar Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, debi'inan al besambuch, di'ite gavai, kadish, ilo, lo kadish, aval inyan chametz, modil ala Rabbi Yochanan, de lo ba'inan al besambuch, di'isuruhu v'chol hecha de'ite'ite, tzricha. Right, so what if you only taught the case of Mikdash Lechem, you may assume that it's dafk by Mikdash Lechem that Reish Lakish requires it to be right there. However, by Chametz, since there's an Isser, Kol Shehu, since there's an Isser, maybe you would agree that no matter where it is, it's going to be Aser. So maybe he would agree to Rabbi Yochanan in such a case, and that's why you have to teach both cases, to show that they argue with each other in both cases. Ba'amine, Rav Oshia mi Rabbi Ami, so Rav Oshia asks Rabbi Ami, Ein lo l'shoche v'yesh lo l'chad m'bnei chabura ma'u. If the shoche does not have chametz, but one of the members of the chabura have chametz, is it, do you violate this? Lo tase, amar le, miktiv, lo tishchat al chametzecha, lo tishchat al chametz k'tiv. You know, it's not written, don't slaughter upon your chametz, it said don't slaughter upon chametz. So it's not just an instruction to the person slaughtering, not to have chametz. Really, anyone in the group, if they have chametz, is going to be a problem. If it was only a problem for the person slaughtering, it would say, lo tishchat al chametzecha. Well, if that's the case, then if anyone has chametz anywhere in the world, right? If they own chametz, it should be an issue, not just if they're part of the chabura. Amar le, amar kar lo tishchot ve lo yalin, lo tishchot al chametz hanach dekaimi ale mishum lo yalin. No, because the Torah juxtaposes the shechita with the lina, with leaving the. Which leaving the parts of the korban on the mizbeach overnight, which you're not allowed to do, and the juxtaposition implies that anyone who is obligated not to leave part of the korban overnight is subject to the obligation not to have chametz upon the shechita, which only applies to the bnei chabura, but not to anyone in the world. So it's only the people who are part of the chabura and the kohen who cannot have chametz while the korban is being slaughtered. However, it's not the case for anyone in the world, because they are not subject to the commandment of lina. They're not subject to making sure that korban doesn't remain overnight. Amar Rav Papa, hilkach kohen maktir techelev over velota say. You know, that would imply that if a kohen does, you know, burns up the if a kohen burns the excess, you know, fats of the korban when he has chametz, so he violates lo tase holvi yeshna b'chal halan adei murim, right? Because, you know, he's apparently subject to the commandment of the lina, right? Of not leaving things overnight. Tanik of a day, the Rav Papa, Shachat Pesach, ala chametz, over b'lo tase, and a braita that accords with the shita of Rav Papa, that a kohen who slaughters the korban Pesach on chametz violates lo tase. Ematai, when is that the case? B'sman ju l'shochet l'zorek olechad b'nei chabura. Right, as long as that chametz belongs to the slaughterer or the person who is sprinkling the blood or one of the members of the group who brought the korban, hayalach habesot ha'olam in zakuklo. If it's just some random person had chametz while he was doing that, not connected to the korban, that's not a problem. Ve'chad ha'shocher ve'chad ha'zorg ve'chad ha'maktir chayav. Furthermore, someone who, if you slaughter the korban pesach, or if you sprinkle the blood, or if you burn the excess limbs, you're going to be chayav if you have chametz, and if you own chametz and you're one of those people. Aval ha'molek ta'ov ba'ba asar ha. However, someone does malika, someone slaughters a bird on the 14th of Nisan, and he has chametz and over below klum. He doesn't violate anything. We're minhu, but we can contradict that teaching. If someone slaughters a korban pesach where he has chametz and he still owns chametz, then he is over on a lotase. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Afa Tamid. Rabbi Yehuda says even if he slaughters a tamid in such an instance, he'd be over a lotase. Amru lo amru ilav pesach bilvad. And they responded to Rabbi Yehuda, no, that was only taught regarding a korban pesach. Imatai. Now when is that the case? Bezman sheyesh shochet ole zorek ole echad mibnei chabura. As long as that chametz belongs to the slaughterer or the sprinkler or one of the members of the group, however, if it's just a random person in chametz, in zakuklo, it's not a problem. And someone who slaughters or sprinkles the blood or does malikata of, slaughters the oaf on the 14th, or sprinkles its blood, is going to be chayev. However, someone who does the kmitza for the mincha is not violating a lotase if they own chametz. Right? And furthermore, one who burns up the one who burns up the excess parts of the korban while he owns chametz is not violating a negative commandment, right? So that's clearly a contradiction between the two brightas in terms of kasha malika malika kasha akhtara akhtara, right? Regarding the first brighta that says that malika is not a problem, you don't violate anything. The second brighta says that you do violate by doing malika on the 14th while you own chametz. And then kasha akhtara akhtara, the first brighta says that it is a problem to do the akhtarat imurim where you own chametz, and the second brayta says that it's not a problem, right? So how do we resolve the contradiction between those two braytas? L'ta'amech tikshe'ilach higufa. According to your shita, the brayta itself, the second brayta itself, is internally contradictory to katani lo amru elo pesach bilavad, right? Because it was taught in the second brayta that the only prohibition existed by the korban pesach. Right? Then afterward you taught that it's a problem to someone who slaughters, someone who sprinkles the blood, someone who does malik of the someone who throws the blood, someone who does malika for the bird, and someone who throws the blood is all going to be chayav. But you know, how can it only apply to a korban pesach if we're talking about malika? There's no malika by a korban pesach. Malika is slaughtering of a bird, right? So clearly, the second brayta, according to the way you understand it, is internally contradictory, because is malika only for korban pesach, in which case there's no malika involved in korban pesach, or is it also for slaughtering a bird on that date? Ela havaha Rabbi Shimon. Rather, both shitas are according to Rabbi Shimon, and we can resolve the contradictions in the following way. Malika, Malika, Lokasha. It's not a contradiction between both instances of Malika. One that says you're chayiv, one that says you're not chayiv. Kan bar ba'asar, kan b'chol shemoy. One is talking about on the 14th, and one is talking about the chol amoy, right? On chol amoy, you're chayiv, but on the 14th, you're not chayiv. Ve'idi ve'idi, Rabbi Shimon he. And both shitas follow Rabbi Shimon's shita, that he expressed the difference between the 14th and chol amoy. Haktara, haktara, nam lokasha. And furthermore, there's no difficulty, there's no internal contradiction when it comes to burning the excess limbs. Tanahi, because it's subject to a machloket, the ika de maki shaktar l'shchita. Some make a halachically significant comparison between slaughtering and burning the excess limbs. That you just like your chayav for slaughtering, your chayav for burning the excess limbs. Ika demand lo makish. And those who don't make such a comparison, you wouldn't be chayav for burning the excess limbs. That's how we resolve both contradictions. We'll stop here.